Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, actor Larry Clark talks about working a private dinner party for Lauren Bacall.
I've waited on a lot of celebrities, and I had been in, you know, working on the Upper West Side for a while, since 1988. So I'd been there for 4 or 5 years, and all I did was wait on kind of people who, you know, and generally they were all pretty cool. She whipped the door open and she went, "Are you Larry? You're late. Light the fires, Larry. Light the fires." I was like, "Okay. What fires? Where are they?" "Over there, Larry." She pulls me aside and she goes, "You're pouring too much liquor in the drinks. You're going to get them drunk. You do need me to pull off this party. Why are you making me nervous? And now, why are you pissing me off?"
Today on the show, actor Larry Clark talks about working a private dinner party for actress Lauren Bacall. And wait till you hear what happened. Stay close.
Hey, this is Larry Clark, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Welcome to 10 years of podcasting. And wait, it's not 10 years of podcasting. I'm in my 10th year. How can I say that?
Congratulations.
How do I say that, Larry, to make it sound really slick?
That sounded pretty slick.
Now in its 10th year.
Now in its 10th year of being cast on the pod.
Bringing you entertainment for 10 years.
10 years solid content, years of content.
Like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, you guys, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed last week's show, which was an anniversary show, part two of the anniversary show the previous week, part one. And Larry, had you been on, you might have been on one of those shows that was like, it was my favorite 9 stories over the last 9 years.
Oh.
But 2 parts, so really 18.
Got it. And that's on the stage.
No, that's right
on
here.
This. Okay.
On Storyworthy, on the podcast.
Not that, there's nothing to do with the
Story Smash.
The Story Smash.
That's a game show.
It's a whole other thing.
It's a whole other thing.
Okay.
You have to understand, you are now in the Storyworthy umbrella.
Okay.
And you have to understand there are many facets.
Good.
It's not the book.
Good, because it's really hard to tell a 1-minute story, let me tell you.
It's not that. Yeah, well, listen, Story Smash is its own entity and
that's
super
rough.
Fun. You're very good at it.
Oh, thank you.
No, you're very, well, you've won once.
I did. I was a winner.
Twice. Yeah, that's a really big deal. Actually.
I beat my wife.
Yeah,
and
that's
It was. That's it didn't go
matters.
Over well in the household.
Get out of here.
She said I robbed her. Should have been crowned again.
You guys are super funny. Anyway, listen, last week's show, like I said, if you haven't listened to the anniversary shows, my point is go back and listen to them. There's 2 separate episodes because I could not choose 9. So there's 18 stories. I don't share the entire story. I share like the best 4 minutes of each of those.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like teasers, and you can always go back and listen on storywithypodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, blah, 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 blah. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But today, you guys, stay with me today because I'm here with actor Larry Clark, and he brings forth the topic, I was Lauren Bacall's servant.
Yes.
And let me tell you, I've had people coming in and out of here with this topic over the years, and I'm just about over it. A kid. This is very specific.
Yes.
This is very specific. It's really one of my favorite kinds of stories because you know going in, I was Lauren Bacall's servant, that we're in for something good. However, it's funny because when I think of it now, servant, I don't know how that could be a good thing unless you're getting
not
paid
good.
Well.
Okay, no,
yeah.
Okay. It's not paid well.
Because, see, in my mind, I hear Lauren Bacall and I just think of this stunning actress and I think
yes.
of that she was seriously probably one of the first feminists in terms of she was choosing scripts.
Absolutely.
She was making headway. She was saying no to things.
She was. She was groundbreaking.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And
she was
I
a feminist, a feminist spirit back in the 30s and 40s, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
so all those things. And she, I think she passed away like in 2014.
Was it? Okay.
And she was almost 90, not quite, I think. And then I remember her in later years. Like, I don't remember those old films. I never really was into those films, specifically black and white films. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I just don't like them. I'm sorry. The point is I remember, though, later in life when she was on The Sopranos.
Oh, okay.
In that episode when Christopher comes out to L.A.
Right.
And he's in that... He's in that swag room, and he's seeing all the swag.
Oh, right.
And then they're out by the pool, and he's noticing that Lauren Bacall's out by the pool.
Yeah.
But she's chatting with, I forget who. She's chatting.
That's been a while.
And then when she leaves the parking lot, they know she's got an entire bag of merchandise because she just went through the swag room.
Right.
So she's got, like, watches and sunglasses and all this stuff. So they attack her in the parking lot.
They
like, chuck her. You know, they, like, body chuck her, body slam her into a car.
I forgot this.
And they steal her swag bag.
Oh.
My point is she was such a good sport in that Sopranos episode.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so funny. So I keep thinking of her in a good light.
I don't think she's known as a good sport.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think she has a reputation. And I think she kind of limited her own career because of...
Interesting.
Yeah.
She made so much money. So maybe she wasn't
she
interested
sure did.
In more than that.
Well, yeah. She was a massive star. But she had a temper. And I think
I can't wait. I love this kind of story.
Oh,
you know what her real name was?
Lauren Bacall? No.
I looked it up. That's the kind of pre-production I do, Larry Clark.
Okay.
So there's a lot of podcasters, they do like
very here. Good.
And then when you're in your 10th year, you go...
Boom.
Betty Joan Persky.
Persky. So she was hiding Jewish roots, or...
That's true. She was Jewish, Betty Joan Persky. She also dated Sinatra for quite a while. You probably know that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So she was like a... You know what I mean?
Yeah, she was a big deal. She was crazy about Bogey.
Okay.
He probably changed his name from like Harvey Leibowitz or something for Humphrey Bogart.
He probably did. I mean, some of the names are hilarious, the changes.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, now before we get to Larry's story, I did want to remind you guys that I have started to actively work on a Patreon page. Big sigh from Larry Clark. No, but I've had a Patreon page, but I never really worked it. Now I'm actually offering some tiers and some things that might entice you, and you guys love me. I put out 5 shows a month, so you can jump on Patreon for $5 a month. That's $1 a show, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know what you were talking about, Patreon page. I didn't know what that meant.
No, really?
No.
Oh, okay. Patreon is where you go on to support artists,
oh, cool.
as it were. Like, I have a girlfriend who supports a lot of painters, and they'll give you painting lessons.
Oh.
They'll give you things in exchange for you supporting them.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so it's a lot of different artists.
Do you want
doing.
Something out of me?
Check it out. No, I don't want anything from you.
Okay.
You've given me your time. You're in this chair. You see, I'm so
I coach.
Slick.
I can coach if you have any auditions.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, I can
there
do that.
There you go.
Patreon.
Patreon.com/storyworthy. Head over there. See what I'm talking about. I'll teach you to tell your own story, as it were. I'm not going to tell your story. I'm going to teach you to tell it better. You know what I mean,
that's what
Larry?
You're giving. Yes.
I give that.
Please give me notes after I tell you the story. Because I'll need them.
Stop it. I give notes to... I do give notes to other things about, like, how to be a guest on a podcast, because I've done, like, maybe 50 podcasts. I give notes on starting a podcast. The point is, I've been doing this a long time,
yes.
and there's a lot you can learn. So head over to patreon.com/storyworthy, blah, blah, blah. I appreciate it. All right, you guys, he's here right now, Larry Clark. He is a working actor. And when I say working... That's right there. That's like getting the blue check mark from Twitter.
It is.
Or Instagram. That means bing.
Bing.
That's exciting. You are an actor. You have been for the last 30 years. You've been in over 80 appearances in television and film. And you just finished your first feature film that you wrote and directed called Life Support. So hopefully that's coming soon. Yes.
Right. It's known internationally as Life Support.
Uh-huh.
Domestically, we're releasing it as 3 Days with Dad.
Oh, so that is the one that you have a premiere coming out here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, they changed it for America.
It's interesting.
It'll be released on, it's called a video on demand release. At the same time, it'll be in the theaters.
Yeah, it'll be down at the L.A. Lemley here in Los Angeles at the mm-hmm. Lemley on Wilshire. And 3 Days with Dad, interesting. Okay, 3 Days with Dad.
Yeah.
From Life Support.
They're rebranding it.
The
distributors rebrand that. They're like they want it to pop as a comedy. And my movie is comic, and it also has some dramatic elements.
And Life Support could be like that movie Coma.
Yeah, it could be.
And that's not funny at all.
Right. Well, it also has a double meaning, supporting life, people that support life and life support.
Yeah.
And our main character does go on life support.
Yeah.
Brian Dennehy.
Okay, right. And you did get some big stars, Brian Dennehy. You got Leslie Ann Warren. Tom Arnold and Dave Koechner. Those guys are fun.
J.K. Simmons, yeah.
That's great, man.
Yeah, man.
So I can't wait to see it.
They're all good friends, and they did me a big mitzvah.
That's fantastic.
And they helped me out a lot.
Well, I'm super excited to see that film. And you also have a short series that you do with your wife.
Yes.
Bitter Homes and Gardens, that is an award-winning web series. It got Best Comedy in the New York Film Festival. And it is so flippin' funny.
I think it was not the New York Film Festival. It was called New York Comedy Fest or I don't know.
Best Comedy in New York Film Festival. It's on my page.
Really?
Yeah.
The New York Film Festival. Jeez, I would have went if it was a New York Film Festival.
It's super funny. It's about your marriage, your real life marriage.
Yeah, we actually got into we got into Palm Springs. We couldn't believe how well it was received, really.
Oh, that's so great. It really is, and it's super funny. You guys are honest, you know? Yeah. Unlike other couples, everything you say is kind of like what other people are thinking, but they're not saying because it's offensive.
Yes, it is very vulgar and offensive. Well, my wife is vulgar.
Well, you're there too.
I hold back.
You and I have something in common, sort of. You're the youngest of five children.
I am.
I'm the youngest of six. So
Are you Irish Catholic?
I win, but I don't win. I probably lost.
Irish Catholic?
Italian.
Oh.
Catholic. Same thing. Yeah. Bless me, Father, for I've sinned. You know.
Yes.
Listen, you guys, you can find Larry over there on Twitter at @LarryClark_, and Clark has an E on the end. How do you like that? And you can also find Larry over there at bitterhomesandgardens.com.
Yes, we do have a website there.
That's the website.
That is the website, yes.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Larry Clark. Yay!
Do they clap on the other end?
I think a lot of people do clap, and sometimes when I'm in the car and I look over and somebody's clapping, I think...
It's your podcast.
They're listening to my
show.
Yeah,
they're listening to you.
Look at that.
If you are clapping right now, you can stop. You know, this is a hard story to tell because it was not a good experience. I learned a lot about celebrity. I learned a lot about Hollywood. This was in the early 90s. I was working at a restaurant called Tattoo in New York City, so I was waiting on it was a very she-she, happening, hip joint. I was being exposed to a lot of celebrities and B-celebrities every single day. This guy who tended the bar there, Michael Jordan, he said, "Hey, Larry, I got this thing for you if you want to do it." He goes, my wife works for Lauren Bacall. She's her assistant, and they need a waiter to run a Christmas party for her. He says, "And I thought about you because you're not going to get paid well at all. As a matter of fact, she's really cheap." He goes, "But you're going to get a good story out of it." He goes, "Because there's going to be some other celebrities there, and you're the only waiter." I went, "Absolutely, sign me up." "Where is it?" He goes, "It's in the Dakotas." I was like, "I love the Dakotas." I was obsessed with the Dakotas because of John Lennon.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the early 90s, blah, blah, blah. That's 10 years after he was shot. And anyway, I was always wanted to get into the Dakotas. And so this was my opportunity. And I wasn't that crazy about Lauren Bacall, but I was like, this is going to be interesting. So he did warn me. He goes, "Listen, it's a Christmas party. She's cheap as hell. They're going to pay you right before you get there. You're going to get an envelope for $75. I said, $75? I mean, I was also working with Glorious Food at the time, which was a high-end catering company. And I was making, you know, $17 an hour, but on Christmas parties, you would make double that. In other words, you would always get tipped pretty heavily at Christmas time. And this was Christmas. This was like December 18th. He was like, "Yeah, that's not going to happen." So I was like, "Whatever. You know, this isn't for the money. I will go." So he set it up. He gave me the parameters. I walked up to the Dakotas. I walked right in. I could not believe it. I was so excited. And the guy was like, you know, I expected a lot more, like, "Hey, who are you?" And, you know, show you. I said, "I'm here for Lauren Bacall." And he goes, "Hey, go up, go straight." He was like, he didn't ask for any like identification. But he did say, "Take the back stairs." And then I realized that the back stairs are the servant stairs. So, you know, with your help, if you're anyone, you're going into these luxurious homes at the Dakota. If you're servicing the owners, you go through the elevators in the back. You don't go in the elevators in the front, which is whatever. But it's something to be noted. So I took it to the fifth floor, got out, and I was like, you know, psyched. And I knocked on the door, and it started. And it did not stop for 3 hours. She whipped the door up, and she went, "Are you Larry? You're late." And I was like, "What do you mean?" I said, it's 7:15. It's an 8 o'clock party. He goes, "It's 7:30. And I was like, okay. And she goes, oh, hell, come in. And that, like, put your stuff down. And she was crazy. And I walked into this amazing, they sold this this apartment recently, I think for $28 million.
Oh, my God.
It had like 20 feet ceilings, an unbelievable number of rooms. It was filled with artifacts and art. I mean, it was unbelievable. She walked into this whole other world. I was like, what is this place? And she was like, light the fires, Larry, light the fires. I was like, okay, what fires? Where are they? Over there, Larry. And so I said, light fires, okay. I got that she was going to be eccentric, and I was totally in for this. I was going to keep my temper, and everything's going to be fine. So I started lighting the fire, and then I was like reaching for something, and it dropped, and she went, oh my God, what did you do? And it was like the door slid open, and you know, some books fell or something. And I went, oh, sorry about that. She goes, good, right there. And all of a sudden, ding dong, she went, get the door, Larry. And I was like, is there anybody else here? And he goes, no. He goes, get the door, take their coats. And I was prepped that she had not had a party in years. That she has basically, you know, been very unsocial for whatever reason. That's what I was told. So she was nervous about this. So who was being invited were Anthony Hopkins, Natasha Richardson, Liam Neeson, the Schlesingers. Arthur Schlesinger was coming, and then another couple I didn't quite know. They were pretty big in the business world. And that's it. So it was a party of about, you know, 9 people, 10 people.
Like a dinner party, really.
It was a dinner party, mm-hmm. Yeah. But I wanted to meet Anthony Hopkins big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. At that time, Remains of the Day was in the theater. You know, I had seen Remains of the Day, and I was like blown away. I'd like seen it the week before. And so I was just like, anyway, I opened the door and there he is. He's like the first to arrive. He's like, hello, hi, how are you? My name's Tony. And I go, hi, ma. And she goes, oh, hello, Tony, how are you? Take his coat. And I took his coat and she hasn't told me, I haven't prepped anything for this party. I don't know where anything is. I'm holding the coat and she's like, over there. Like I can see her like pointing with her head, over there. So I go, yes, thank you. And I put the coat down, ding dong. And another door, then all of a sudden everyone's coming in. I'm taking coats. And she goes, get him drinks, Larry. And I go, yes, what would you like, Mr. Arnold? He goes, Diet Coke. Okay, got a Diet Coke for him. And then everyone kind of like went into the front room. And she was like, this is a long story. So I got to kind of do the Reader's Digest version because it's unbelievable the way that things transpired. And how I connected with her. She was obsessed with me during this whole party. She kept her eyes on me constantly. And we hadn't really talked before, you know what I mean? So I didn't have any prep. So she was trying to teach me or guide me or something. And it looked like she hadn't had many parties, truly. So she was like, so we all went to the first room. And everyone pretty much arrived, and she was like, make drinks. And I asked everyone for drinks, and I started making them, and I see her looking at me as I was, there's a little tiny little drink table, I'll never forget it, and it had little tiny soda bottles, and I'm making like little gin and tonics and like that, and she's staring at me. And so we stayed there for about 10 minutes, and we moved to the, shall we go to the next room, she said, ha ha ha. And again, she's like laughing for everyone else and looking at me, kind of leering. So I got that right away. I was like, why is she treating me like this? You know, like, I just got here. I'm a good guy.
How old were you at the time?
This was in the early 90s. So I'm like around 33, 32. Yeah.
So maybe she's into you.
She's not into me at all. No, not into me at all. Okay. No, she's leering at me. She's trying to speak to me with her eyes. So anyway, they move to the next room. She pulls me aside and she goes, you're pouring too much liquor in the drinks. You're going to get them drunk. And I go, okay, that's a standard. Under my breath, I was like, it's a standard amount. I've made a lot of drinks. But okay. And then she goes, and put put the lids back on the little soda bottle. And she starts doing it in front of me, angrily. And these little tiny little pony soda and tonics. And I'm like, I'm literally looking at her like, I have so much to do. And I go, am I literally going to be watching you do, like, make this point about pony bottles? This was a good precursor to the rest of the night because this didn't stop. Okay, so we go to the next part. She goes, get the wine, more wine. And, Anthony Hopkins was unbelievably nice. He would look you in the eye. He treated me like an equal. And Liam Neeson was incredibly gracious. You know, I didn't really know. He wasn't that big then, but he was just becoming a star. And Natasha was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And they were chain-smoking Marlboros and drinking tons of red wine. They all drank. She goes, go get the appetizers. And I, she's whispering under my breath, I'll be right back. And I go back there, and she had her woman that obviously works there every day. You know, she was Mexican and didn't speak much English. And I tried to get some stuff out of here. I couldn't get anything. I was like, what do I do? She just handed me this tray. And I go out there, and I give her the appetizers. And then she like pulls me aside. She's like, what are you doing? You know, she was giving me this little private thing, like I'm fucking up. And I go, I don't know what are you talking about? She goes, no, just we're going to go to dinner soon. Just stay on it. And I go, okay, all right. And by then, this feeling of being like starstruck starts to leave.
Yeah.
And now I start getting pissed off. I've waited on a lot of celebrities.
Yeah.
And I had been in working on the Upper West Side for a while, since 1988. So I'd been there for 4 or 5 years, and all I did was wait on kind of people who, you know, and generally they were all pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then again, I was working at Tattoo. So, but she was starting to piss me off. I was like, you kind of don't talk to me this way, you know? And
it's like she needs you.
Yeah, you do need me to pull off this party. Why are you making me nervous?
Right.
And now, why are you pissing me off? She came outside. She went, use these glasses over here for the wine. She goes, these are bogey glasses. They're for our wedding. She goes, they're for Tiffany. She goes, don't break them. Don't break them. Like, and in my head, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to break them. But I'm like, why are we using these freaking Tiffany glasses then? I'm nervous as hell, passing these things out, pouring wine in them. And then they all went and had dinner. And it was like a buffet-style dinner. And I literally started sweating and having a bit of a panic attack during all this because literally I thought this, oh my God, I'm getting so angry, I can't control it. So I left the room and I called my girlfriend at the time. And I was like, I told her, I'm going to leave. I'm just going to walk. I'm getting paid $75 and this woman's treating me like crap. And she goes, hang in there. She kind of talked me down. I go, this is unbelievable. I said, I want to take these bogey glasses. I'm going to just smash them on the floor. She goes, no, just hang in there. So where am I in the story? So they had dinner. And then she, at one time during dinner, she and I was kind of hiding in the back room because now I thought about, you know, every time I come out, I'm having this weird interaction with her. I'm going to stay away. Like, I'm just going to hang out. They all got their main course. I'm going to stay away.
Yeah.
And she went, where is he? I hear her echoing down the hall. She goes, where is he? Where is the boy? She called me boy. Boy! Like that, like barked it. And I went, boy. Boy. She says, where's the boy? I'm not a boy. And that's where that slave feeling started to kind of kick in. And everything started kind of, the way she had treated me with every moment leading up to that, now I was pissed.
Wow.
And I was, every moment, probably I stayed there for another hour until the end of the party, but I could have left every 5 minutes. I was like, should I leave? No, I'm going to stay. But now I'm pissed. She went, Larry, she goes, take the coffee orders. And I went, okay, I'll be right back. And I went to the kitchen, and they had set up this huge classic, you know, coffee and tea service had been set up with these, you know, very expensive china, you know, coffee and tea glasses and, you know, this huge, you know, what is it called?
Decanter.
A huge coffee decanter, yes. And it's all glorious. And it's on this big silver tray. I picked it up and it's heavy, heavy as hell. And I start walking it down. And in my head, I'm thinking, you know, I know what she wants me to do. She wants me to stay in that little room. They were in a little tiny room. And she wants me to pour coffee for everybody. And what would you like? Coffee, cream, and then you pour 10 cups of coffee. Already I'm sweating, I'm angry, and I'm in my head, I'm thinking, there's no way I'm going to do this. There's no way I'm going to do this. So as I'm walking down the hall, Anthony Hopkins is walking the other way towards me, and I'm walking with the silver tray, and I just seen Remains of the Day, and it's just he and I, and he walks straight towards me, and in my head, I'm like, I am you. I just felt like saying, I'm an actor. I'm an actor. I am you. And I just watched you. And I'm more than this. I'm more than this. I wanted to say it. And he went, excuse me, where are the bathrooms? And I was like, down the hall. Down the hall, Mr. Sir Anthony. Oh, God. Look at me. I'm always going to be a waiter. I'm always going to be this. I'm tragic, just like in your movie. My life's going to be a tragedy. I'll never do what I want to do. So anyway, I walked all the way down. Like, there she was. I put it right, that coffee service, right in front of Lauren Bacall. And as she went, Larry, like basically like, Larry. And I just went, turned, and I walked. And went, Larry, Larry. And I just walked away. Walked away. And then I stayed away for the rest of the party. And they all like finished their coffee, made coffee themselves. Oh, I'm sorry. This is America. Oh, you got to make your own coffee. I'm sorry if I didn't, serve you correctly. And then he left and she laid into me. And she said, I don't know where you think you've done this before or why you even think you qualify as a professional. And I stopped her and I said, listen, I am a professional. I work for one of the best catering companies in America, Glorious Foods. I've been in the service industry now for the last 15 years. I know exactly what I'm doing. And you should have called me in an hour earlier and we could have gone over this party. And I needed an assistant because your place is so damn big. I said, but you didn't do that, did you? She goes, what? And I totally gave it back to her. And she's like, well, I was told that you were a professional. I said, again, I am a professional, but I should have had a captain on this party. And you didn't want to spend the money, you didn't want to do that, so that's fine. But I can only do so much. Now I'm going to, clean up. And it was interesting. When I gave that little bark back at her, it shut her up. And she got this, like, little smile on her face, almost like she enjoyed it. And that kind of, like, rat-a-tat-tat back and forth kind of continued. And then she started asking me about what I did. She started opening up in a way. She goes, so you're an actor, you know. She kind of opened up on that a little bit, and she told me a couple of bogey stories. Then it was just her and I. The guests have left. I mean, the workers left. It was just her and I in this huge place. But the whole tenor of the night changed. And now, somehow in all this, I'd gotten her respect.
Yeah.
And now my view of her had changed. So now I thought, you know what it was? I got through it. Whatever it is, I told her, you don't treat me this way. And she was like, he's right. You know, I could see I landed on her. And all of a sudden, she wasn't just looking at a worker. She was looking at a human being and an actor, you know, or whatever I wanted to be. I was standing there strong, and I was not going to acquiesce to her. And I didn't care whether she was a celebrity or not. And I think ultimately that got through to her. And I just remember us finishing up the dishes, and I was cleaning those bogey glasses, and she started telling me stories. And then we were done, and it was a little awkward. Like, all of a sudden, we were like, oh. There was a little bit of tension. I wouldn't say it was sexual tension, but it was a little bit like, okay, well, time to go, you know? It was that little moment. And then we had this this thing at the end where I went to back to the, of course, she didn't let me leave in the front entrance. I had to leave during, you know, in the back servant entrance. She took me to the back door and she went, and I go, I forget, where is the elevator? And she went, well, you go to the left, take another left, and there's the elevator. She goes, you press the button, and when the door opens, you get in. That's what she said to me. And as she was saying it to me, she was like in her back door. I remember the light was kind of hitting her from behind, and it darkened her face. And, you know, I was kind of shocked when I first met her how much she had aged, you know, because we didn't have internet then. You know, we hadn't seen a lot of pictures of people aging. So she wasn't striking Lauren Bacall anymore. You know, during the whole party, I was like, wow, this woman's gotten older. She's obviously in her late 60s or whatever she was. But somehow in that moment, with the light from behind, I saw the beauty of her silhouette and I saw her style. And then immediately I thought about her most famous line, which was, her most famous line is, which is, how do you whistle? You ever remember that? It's from one of those movies that you haven't seen. It's her famous line is, they go, how do you whistle? And she goes, well, you put your lips together and you blow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So, but it almost had that kind of a sexy kind of a feel to it when she was telling me to go to the elevator. And for a second, I just looked at her and went, wow, I can see it. I see it now. This is a sexy, powerful woman.
Wow.
At the same time, I thought to myself, she's very alone. And I was leaving her alone in this mansion of an apartment, and that you could tell that she had not had a lot of parties. She wasn't going to have anyone over for a long time after this, and that she really was alone. And I made a note to myself. I'm not impressed with that with celebrity. Like my career, I want to be surrounded by people and joy and love and a family. And I would never have that feeling. I didn't want to be around that. I wasn't impressed with that. That scared me. So anyway, I left and I got a story out of it.
Wow.
And there you go.
You got a great story out of it. I mean, whoever said that to you was, that was accurate anyway. Did she tip you?
Not at all. No way.
So the straight
$75. That's it.
And you're in and out.
I was in a check before it even started.
The whole time I kept thinking, why did he go in only 45 minutes before? And I know what you're saying now is that she was cheap and she didn't want to pay for one more hour.
No, she didn't. No, yeah, no.
Yeah,
no.
How ridiculous.
No, and hey, I needed another waiter because the place was so big that just to go get wine, you had to walk down a huge hallway.
Well, it's so foreboding. That building is so foreboding. And I've seen it, like you were saying, because that's where John Lennon lived as well, there, mm-hmm. right on the corner of Central Park, 71st, something like that.
Yeah, Yoko lived upstairs. She lives up in the penthouse.
She probably still does.
She's still there.
I'm sure she still is. Yeah, why wouldn't she be? So this is, it sounds like you were like in a film noir.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a Bette Davis moment.
Truly.
Who was the lady from Double Indemnity? Who's that?
Barbara Stanwyck?
Barbara Stanwyck, yeah. Wow.
She definitely had that feel of one of those women. Larry! Larry, get in here.
And I did keep thinking the whole way through how sad she must be. Like, her life must be so lonely.
Yes.
And using your name over and over again. Like, these were all things like she had no friends.
Yeah, she was really off her game. I just felt like she was really nervous for this party. And I honestly, these were old friends of hers coming in to visit. But you could tell that she was just like, I don't do this often. Yeah. I don't bring people into this house anymore.
Well, she doesn't have friends anymore.
Right.
You know? Yeah, it's all so depressing, but it's also such like it's like a character study.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is? When you wait on people, you find out really, I think, who their true character is, how they treat waiters, you know, if you watch them. And so, like, Anthony Hopkins was his... pure and as true and as funny and as unjudging and as he treats you as an equal. Same thing as Liam and everyone else at the party, but she didn't.
Yeah,
she really looked down on me, and because it was like, I'm paying you, I've made the immediate judgment that you're less than.
And when you would see her interacting with her party guests, like Anthony Hopkins or whoever. How did she treat them? And then,
oh, she was like an actress. She was like laughing, going, "Oh yes, that's wonderful." And out of the corner of her eye, she's looking at me.
Did anybody see her treat you like shit?
They must have.
And nobody said anything, or nobody.
They were all
at
like,
you.
"Well."
But did anybody look at you like,
no.
"What a loony she is"?
I remember. I think to overcompensate, when I met Liam, he went, "Liam." He goes, "What's your name?" And I go, "Larry." He goes, "Liam." And he shook my hand.
Yeah, like, she, God bless you for trying to make this work.
Yeah, keep that red wine coming, and you're a good guy. Like, I'm Liam. That was, you know, that's that's rare that you sit around shaking hands with people as you're waiting on them.
Yeah. How do you like the fires in her place? How'd you like the fires? Is it like just gas?
No, there wasn't gas. They don't have gas in New York.
Well, it's super, first of all, that
they were all
building,
prepped. They were prepped by somebody, so they had...
I see.
They already had paper in there, and they just need to be lit.
So you lit the fires.
Yes.
I'm picturing this huge...
Three fireplaces, yeah.
Yeah, she died in that space, I believe, there at the Dakota.
Yeah.
I think she had a stroke. Now, at this party, she was... I looked it up, or I didn't look it up. I actually calculated. She was 79.
Mm.
So she was older.
Yeah, she was.
It's very...
you could not tell with her energy level.
Yeah.
No, she did not move like a 79-year-old. She didn't talk like one.
Yeah.
She talked like the old Lauren Bacall. Like, she had that energy. But her face looked older.
She was a poster girl during the war, wasn't she? Like,
yeah.
Wasn't she full on like a sailor girl or something?
She was a huge, huge star. The soldiers had pictures of her in their tents. Yeah.
It's a great story. I heard another story from actress Suzanne Kroll. I don't know if you knew Suzanne. She passed away. But the point is she told a story about meeting Madonna.
Mm.
Very similar. Up here in Los Feliz Hills. And very similar. You know, Madonna in this huge house. No friends. Completely alone. And it's God, I don't want to end up like that.
I think it's a common story.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Have you ever had another story like that? Or have ever known anybody else like that?
Oh, sure.
Who?
I mean, I waited on a lot of people in their homes with Glorious Food, so we saw quite a few of them. I think one of the most interesting ones, it wasn't a celebrity, it was one of the richest people,
who?
Whitney. It was Mrs. Whitney. We would do her Glorious Foods, they'd go to her mansion, the Whitney Mansion, which is in upstate New York, not upstate, but just about an hour out of the city.
Yeah.
And we would do her indoor tennis tournament every year.
Wow.
Which had an indoor old style tennis
Seriously?
Court. Which was a new, it was an old English version of tennis
Amazing.
That actually had all these different rules, and they had old rackets, and we'd walk around with champagne. But I'll never forget, the most expensive painting in the world was there, Toulouse-Lautrec. The dancing woman was right there in the side room where everyone ate. And then she didn't come down. She was upstairs in this small little room and was surrounded by Van Goghs.
Oh my gosh.
And Rembrandts. Oh yeah. And Rembrandts. And they were like, don't go in there. That's where Mrs. Whitney is. Stay away. And I remember kind of peeking in, and she was in her wheelchair. And she was just surrounded by all this great art, and you could just see that she's just checked out. And again, I got that same vibe.
She was alone.
She was completely alone.
And how old do you think she was?
She was probably in her 90s.
That's so sad, isn't it?
And I just remember thinking, you know, all that money, and it doesn't mean a damn thing.
Yeah.
You know, you could, all this money actually doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean, she's just lonely, and she's old, she's frail. And, you know.
I often think that the only thing we have to give of value is our time. You know, that's the only thing you can really give to somebody.
And your heart. I do believe that you can be of service.
Yeah. Yeah, you can be of service. I'll go there. Okay. Huh.
I think that's why we're here.
And so were you, when you stopped catering and you stopped waitering and all that stuff, was that like the biggest relief ever?
Biggest. I mean, I still have kind of restaurant nightmares.
I have restaurant nightmares.
Yeah.
I've worked in 18 restaurants, and then I became a flight attendant, which is just like, same thing.
I worked for, I mean, how many years I put it all together? It's a stunning, I mean, I didn't start work, so it was 17 years in food service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it's a long time, and it...
And I worked as a mover. I was a mover for 2 years.
That's hard work.
Yeah.
But as a waiter, when you say restaurant nightmare, I know what you mean, but tell everybody else what you mean.
The service industry is, I'll put it to you this way. I wrote a play. It was called Body Count, and it was based on all my experiences in working in high-end places.
Yeah.
And really high turnover, expensive restaurants.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I worked in Fiorello's at Lincoln Center, where we used to turn over our stations 6 times a night, and it just never stopped.
Yeah, that's a lot.
The pressure was so intense.
So when you go to sleep at night, then you have the nightmares. So what are the nightmares like?
Well, you're back waiting on tables.
You're in the weeds.
You're in the weeds, and you can't quite get caught up, and people are...
I would actually get up and, like, wait on the dresser and the whatever in my room. I would move
hilarious.
Things around. Like, I would move the brush to there, or the mirror would go over there, and I would... Because I had... It's intense. Horrible.
Well, I mean, I was on the trajectory of... I burned out. I mean, eventually, you reach a thing with waiting where you can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And I had... I was changing tips on credit cards at Fiorello's.
Wow.
Yeah, because these guys would leave me bad tips, and I go, "Oh, that kind of sucked. I'm going to change it." And I would change it right there, which is a federal crime.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
How long did you do that?
I did that for about a year. I was stealing from a lot of restaurants as well,
Larry.
As most waiters do.
Yeah.
If you're there, if you're a hardened waiter, you know you can. You secretly trying to find a way to game the system.
Yeah.
And bartenders do it anyway. I finally talked to a buddy. He's like, "Listen, you got to get out of this." Because, you know, you're not helping anybody, and you're going to get caught. So I did. I quit, and I went into catering. And you can't really cheat in catering.
Yeah, because it's a lump sum. I have a friend, and he has taught me a lot about that, how people scam
everybody.
The system. But, I mean, I was a waitress in so many restaurants, and I don't think I ever
you
did
didn't,
that.
You didn't really? Oh, good for you.
Well, I don't think so.
That says something about your character.
I mean,
I would be so silently pissed off at the owners and the manager about the way I was ways I was being treated.
Well,
And we'd go, okay, fine, I'll work Christmas Eve. But you're going to lose $100.
Wow.
You know?
And then, and then also, my friend tells me about how bartenders constantly are like, they're just.
That's the easiest way to steal money.
That's what he says. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and it's just not a matter of how much your bartender is stealing. It's like you want to control it. And that's true just about every restaurant. As a matter of fact, the restaurant at Fiorello's I was working at, they lost two general managers because of stealing while I was there.
Somebody should be doing a reality show about that sort of thing in terms of like the theft in restaurants and the
it's incredible. It's yeah. It's like the mob.
It's such a funny industry. It's a hard industry.
It's the hardest.
A lot of hours.
Listen, it's not working in a coal mine, but God, it felt like it.
Yeah, I know. No, I hear you. Hey, listen, this is a great story. This Lauren Bacall, I will never think anything else about her now except for that party. And I like that you stood up to her. Thank goodness you
did
that.
And then we came together at the end.
I could see that because she respects, you know, that sort of, she doesn't want people to be afraid of her. They just are.
Yeah.
And she probably, in the end, she just wants somebody to, you know, meet her at her ground.
Yeah.
And you did. I just wish you'd done it earlier. Because if you'd walked in and said, like, okay, wait, if this is the way it's going to be, we need to lay some groundwork here because you might want to replace me. Or were you...
I should have said that.
Or were you trying to be like, no, people told me she was going to be crazy, and I said, yes. I can handle it. I
kept thinking of Michael Jordan and his wife, and I couldn't walk out because I was like, listen, they told me she was eccentric. Yeah. They told me that she was cheap.
Look out.
And she's got a temper. They warned me. Just get a good story out of it, Larry.
Yeah.
And get out of there.
If you could get into the mode of, but the thing is that on top of all that, you'd already had all this waiting experience. You'd already had your fill of customer service.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it kind of all met at a hilt. If you could do it now, like as an actor, you could probably go in and just, you know, play the role of a servant, like, and play it off. You know what I mean? Like,
can I play a waiter?
Like, turn it around.
Can I play a servant or a waiter? Yes, I can.
That's what I mean.
I'm very well equipped.
You're very well equipped. I heard you, there's a quote. I think it's on IMDb that you said, you don't have to audition to be an artist.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That's the first thing I ever put up on IMDb, because they were like, you only quotes? And I remember thinking, I wrote two quotes. One was, check your props, and one was, you don't have to audition to be an artist.
Your props is funny.
Because I think a lot of actors get caught up and they fall by the wayside. They get caught up in the business. And when really it's an artistry, and you can always depend on the art. Because that, you can't be rejected from the artistry and studying the craft.
That's beautiful, yeah. And a lot of stand-up comedians, and I mean, I do comedy, so I kind of do it for that reason as well. You can't really be turned down.
No, you can't.
And you just do it anyway, and you know, if you guys don't like it,
be pure to the form every time you do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And no one can take that away from you.
That comes with age, though, I believe. I don't think you can tell that to a 25-year-old or even maybe a 30-year-old. I think that has to be gained, that wisdom.
I think so, but I was also taught that way.
Yeah, but you're not kind of
respect,
either.
Bring that kind of respect to your to every time you go on the stage, and that it demands it.
Yeah,
interesting. Be honest all the time. Never stop being honest on stage.
On stage. Interesting. I like you, Larry Clark. Thank you so much. Really, this is a great story.
This is
really
a pleasure.
Fun. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. I want to thank you again so much for tuning in today. Don't forget to follow me over there on social media at Storyworthy, and follow Larry Clark as well. He may not, you know, follow you back. He may not even respond to you, but he might. It's hard to say. Now, on Facebook, let's just get down to that. You're Clark Lawrence.
For now, yes.
Clark Lawrence. On Twitter, Larry Clark with an E _. And you are on Instagram as well. And that's Larry Clark.
Yeah, follow me on Instagram. Yeah. I'm open to people following me on Instagram, but, you know.
All right.
That's cool.
Cool. Larry Clark me.
Larry Clark me. The real me or something. I don't know. Someone stole my account once, so.
Oh, it's the worst. Instagram is the worst. It's so hard to get in and out of. I don't know why.
Yeah.
And, like, I've been without a phone for, like, the last 6 days. And so I've had no Instagram. Because you can't do Instagram without a phone.
I couldn't make it. I couldn't make it without
a phone.
I've
done really well. It's been really good, actually.
Well, I couldn't call you today, so.
Oh, I'm sorry. That is true. That is true. It's so far on my end, it's been going well, but of course, I don't know any messages that have come in or out.
Yes.
So maybe there's been major problems. I don't.
You can call in. You know,
my mother
to your
could
phone.
Be dead. I don't know.
You can still get your messages.
How if do
you
I call in?
Did you cancel
phone.
Your service?
No.
Oh, well, then you can call in.
I don't
just
have a
call
phone.
Your number.
I don't have a phone.
I know you call in on a landline or my
what?
Phone.
What is a landline?
call on my phone and retrieve your messages.
Me and you, we're doing it.
You can retrieve all your messages. Well, you got a lot of them.
Me and Larry Clark are going to retrieve my messages, you guys. Okay. You guys, don't forget to check out my new Patreon page. I really appreciate it. All right, you guys, on behalf of the very talented Larry Clark, you crack me up, man. You're so funny.
Thank you.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.